We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
On today's episode of The Timeline, we talk to a hand surgeon about Devin Booker's injury, rant about the media, and answer your questions.
Let's go!
We welcome on to the podcast to talk about Devin Booker's recent hand surgery. Andy, let me let you introduce yourself.
Hey guys, I'm Dr. Andy Blunt. I am a plastic and hand surgeon over at Dignity Health Medical Group. I work mostly at St. Joe's Hospital. And I am not Dr. Booker's doctor, or I am not Booker's doctor. And I can't specifically talk about his case, but I can talk in general terms about hand injuries.
I appreciate you coming on. I know that you had to say that. We all assume that. We know you're not his doctor. We're really happy to have you on because this is a really interesting injury, and the way it's been reported is a little weird and kind of vague in how they've talked about it. So I know we can't get into specific details about what happened, but we can talk about what normally happens in injuries and surgeries like this. Now, you normally do hand surgeries, right?
Yeah, about 50% of my practice is hand, wrist, forearm, so I end up seeing a lot of hand trauma and doing a lot of hand surgery for trauma.
All right, awesome. Sam, you're here too. I know you have a specific quote from the Ryan McDonough, the general manager, on how this all happened. Could you read that for us?
Sure. So, Andy, Ryan McDonough recently went on Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM, and we just wanted to get your take on what he's been saying to the media and kind of parse through it for us. Again, obviously you're not Devin Booker's doctor, but he said, as you guys know, he was talking to the radio hosts, Devin Booker did have an injury late last year, but then he said there were no symptoms over the summer. The hand died down. It calmed down a little bit. It looked good. And there was nothing structurally wrong with it. He went on to say that Devin Booker injured it in a pickup game. And he said there was no trauma that we could see. It wasn't like he hit it or jammed it or anything stood out unusually while he was playing. The hand just swelled up. So obviously, just speaking from your expertise, do you believe that this could be a lingering issue for Booker that has existed since the spring, and that it would be possible for the hand to just swell up to the point where he would need surgery in a pickup game without any particular instance of trauma?
Yeah, you know, there are hand injuries that we think of as definitely acute, causing a in the words of the general manager, a structural problem with the hand, and that would be more like a bone injury. And those things you treat right away. And it would be very rare for a professional athlete to not get treatment because they're going to get an x-ray every time they have any kind of complaint. And there are other injuries out there where they are more chronic those are more like the soft tissues around bones, maybe ligament injury, or, you know, the joint capsule injury that's like the protective coating around a joint. It's possible to get little injuries of those areas that require immobilization, or, you know, requires a strong word, where immobilization is recommended and then some physical therapy. But, you know, in athletes, it's hard to, they're kind of a special population because they want to get back right away. You know, their performance and the team's performance is kind of on the line. So you can make special accommodations for athletes and try to get them back earlier. So, you know, that may put them at risk for more of a lingering injury.
What, to the point that you just made, so the official word on this injury was that it was a surgery to repair the fifth metacarpophalangeal in his right hand, which as I understand is the bone underneath the pinky in the right hand. If surgery was required, is it always the case that surgery is required if it's broken, or is there scenarios if it's not broken that it would be required? Because in the official story, the word is that he injured it in March and then it was re-aggravated 6 months later in September, enough for it to require a surgery. Now, that would seem like it wouldn't mean it was broken, to the point you made about him probably receiving an x-ray when it was initially injured. So what type of injury could be there that would need surgery if it wasn't broken?
Right, so first off, excellent pronunciation of metacarpophalangeal joint.
Thank you.
I can tell you practiced. there are obvious injuries that need surgery, like we were saying. So the joint that you're talking about, any joint is two bones that come together and the space between them, including the fluid in the joint and the cartilage. So that is a joint. The kind of easy things to fix and the easy indications for surgery are, I broke my bone near the joint and it's displaced. So if you see that in definitely in an athlete or many other people, depending on the kind of status of the patient, you often do surgery for a displaced bone, and near that joint, you can often traumatize that an area enough. In the fifth, specifically the fifth MCP joint, you can traumatize it enough very commonly, since it's on the edge of the hand, to need surgery. So what could it be? It could be the bone right under the joint or the bone adjacent to the joint needing surgery. But again, usually that is something that we do right away, and Devin Booker would definitely have it done right away. So then there's the other things. And, you know, when you have basketballs or other large objects flying at you, sometimes it catches a finger wrong. I've seen that before, and it can damage a ligament. Very rarely to the extent that you would need surgery. I've never actually had to do surgery for a ligament at that joint, but there are some niche surgeries out there that we really perform on athletes to try to get them past certain amounts of pain, or you know, that would be more aggressive in the general population than normal, but we do for athletes because we want them to get back sooner. So that could be something like cleaning out his joint with a scope. That could be something like, and I'm just speculating here because I have no idea what surgery he had, but you can stick really tiny scopes into joints and kind of clean out any inflammatory tissue. You can reinforce ligaments with little anchors around joints so that they're a little bit tighter and to help with healing in that area. You can even open joints to clean them out, which would be a little more aggressive, but with small joints, sometimes you have to.
Now, with that type of surgery, the estimated recovery time that they've given for Devin Booker is 6 weeks. Would that sort of match one of those sort of scoping type of surgeries, or is 6 weeks not realistic for that type of surgery?
Yeah, so the 6 weeks is to allow for enough healing to get somebody to where they can move again and have not long-term pain. So if I had somebody that wasn't a pro athlete coming to my clinic and they injured a finger, like a ligament, and I was not planning on surgery, they would get 6 weeks of something, right? They would have a brace for 6 weeks. They would come out for very gentle range of motion. And then the hope is 6 weeks later, they are starting with some pain, but long-term they don't get pain. In this situation, when somebody has surgery that is not to like fix a bone, you have the 6 weeks or so to allow all the inflammation to calm down, allow enough healing and scar tissue to be put down in the area of injury so that they can start moving but not re-injure.
Interesting.
So yes, I mean, in short, 6 weeks is kind of the time frame I'd put on a lot of different injuries for the hand, whether it's trying to heal a bone or trying to heal a ligament, just getting things to calm down. You know, 2 weeks is too little and 2 months is too long. Kind of 6 weeks is just a nice general amount of time to get somebody to heal something, even if they're young and healthy.
What, Andy, do you believe here is the risk, as we talk about Devin Booker's recovery, for future re-aggravation of the area or for sort of long-term lingering pain maybe being something that now we have to look at in terms of his health profile over the next several years?
I mean, that's a really tough question to answer. I mean, I think it'd be very unlikely that this would affect his long-term performance. You know, this sounds like something that in the general population would be very minor. For him, it causes pain, so it's more of an issue, especially because, you know, he needs his hand to do every part of his job. But this is, reading all that stuff worries me 0% that he would have a long-term problem from this.
That is great, great to hear as far as us being Suns fans. Now, if it were broken, let's just say maybe I have my doubts about the story so far that they've told us. Just the fact that something happened in March and then it being aggravated enough in September to require surgery 6 months later. But say he did have another injury that's maybe going unreported. I know in my experience when I hear about athletes having hand injuries, almost all the time it's because they punch something. So not that Devin Booker did do that, but a lot of times that can break a bone like that in their hand. One thing that happened is Devin Booker posted on his Instagram saying first surgery was a success. Now, a lot of people thought, oh, is he talking about this is his first surgery he's ever gotten? Or is there a possibility that maybe another surgery is required at some point? Now, I've heard of some surgeries for bones being repaired if there is a broken bone where something is actually placed into the hand that has to be removed later in order for it to fully heal. Is that an actual possibility? Is that a normal surgery for a broken bone in the hand, or is that just Twitter making up stories?
No, it is true that if we put hardware in somebody's hand, there's a possibility it comes out later. It's not always taken out. So let's say somebody breaks a bone in their hand and we can use pins to fix it. We literally insert the pin under an x-ray machine and the pins are sticking out of your hand. So 6 weeks later, 4 weeks later, you come back to the clinic and we pull the pins out. If we put a plate in somebody, then sometimes it interferes with motion long term and we end up taking it out, or sometimes it aggravates a tendon or causes inflammation. We end up taking it out. So it's possible for a bone surgery that somebody would need to get their hardware taken out at some point.
And if it were that type of surgery, is the 6 week recovery time from the initial surgery still realistic, or would that extend that overall healing time?
Yeah, I mean, so the 6 weeks is, I would say that is an appropriate amount of time for healing, whether that is the time to starting motion or when rehab starts. That is so dependent on the surgery and the injury that it's really hard to say.
That makes a lot of sense. I would say that so far what you've talked about has made me feel good and a little bit scared, but overall I'm feeling pretty good that this is not going to be something that affects Devin Booker long term. And and even if it was a broken bone, it doesn't sound like you expect that would be affecting him long term. Is that right?
I can't think of anything long term that would affect any. I cannot think of any sports injury to that finger long term that would affect his long term play.
That is great to hear. Sam, do you have any other questions for Andy?
No, I think that's about it. Andy, thank you so much for coming on and really giving us some professional expertise. It's a lot more useful than just the two of us amateurs speculating endlessly about what could be going on. So thank you again.
That will not stop me. That will not stop me from speculating.
Hey, wait. So sorry, can I say one thing? I think my last statement was a little bit aggressive. I think there are injuries that can cause long-term difficulty, even in the finger. But based on what I've seen in the reports, it does not sound like that is what is the case for Devin Booker.
Okay, perfect. That's a good clarification.
I just have to change that statement, because if somebody has, like, if something is not healed right in the joint from a previous injury, they can get arthritis early from that and cause pain. So, I mean, while those are super rare, I've only seen like one in the last 4 years where somebody actually broke their bone. It was healed in the wrong position. And in an athlete like Devin Booker, again, he's going to get an x-ray and he's going to get everything fixed as soon as it would need to be fixed. But I think it's too aggressive to say that I can't think of anything that would cause long-term trouble. I just think, I think based on the story and what I've read about Devin Booker's case, I think it would be highly unlikely that whatever he's dealing with would cause a long-term issue. That's more accurate.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you for that.
Dr. Andrew Blunt, thank you so much for joining us. This is really great to get this actual expertise on the podcast. Hopefully this sets some Suns fans' concerns at ease. They don't have to feel as worried maybe as they would. And it also gives us an idea that the six-week time frame is a little realistic. Sometimes we don't know when the time frames are accurate when it's given to us by the official team. So this helps us. Once again, Andy, thank you so much for joining us. This has been
my
really
pleasure,
great.
Guys. Tons of fun.
Sam, you got something to say?
Yeah, I do, Mike. It's so, I'm about to go on a lengthy rant, I think, and I just want to make it clear before I do that this is not a Suns Homer podcast. We, Mike and I, have been in the same boat as every other Suns podcast out there, predicting 30 to 35 wins for the Suns coming into this upcoming season, if we're lucky, and if we don't amend this point guard situation soon and go in with Shaq Harrison as our starting point guard, then, you know, it very well may be less than 30 wins. It may be closer to something like 25 wins. But all that being said, I just have to take a few minutes and defend our name in regards to what's been going on. Because for those who don't know, this has been national shit on the Suns week in the NBA podcasting realm. To bring you up to speed, on the Ringer NBA podcast, Chris Vernon told Kevin O'Connor that he is stupid to defend the Ryan Anderson Brandon Knight trade. And that quote, "The stupid Phoenix Suns are the only team that would take that contract without getting a first rounder back." Then, the next day, Bill Simmons spent a good 20 minutes on his own podcast talking about the Suns, during which he questioned why the Suns made the decision to offer Devin Booker a max extension this summer. Basically, he said that maxing out a player after their third season is something you only do for guys who you believe can be an MVP one day, like, quote, and I shit you not, he said this, Jason Tatum, or maybe a Karl Anthony Towns. So, just to be clear, for Bill Simmons, in his world, which is really just one insufferable bubble of Boston sports bias, Jason Tatum, after one season, is a lock to be an MVP candidate, whereas Karl Anthony Towns is only a maybe, and Devin Booker is on the outside looking in. And the hardest hit, which I just only found out about today, came from Sports Illustrated's Ben Golliver, who ranked Devin Booker as the 50th best player in the league, behind guys like Robert Covington, Gary Harris, Eric Gordon, and said that the hype around Booker on the internet is, quote, way, way too much right now, and I don't understand it. I don't think people watch Suns games. He went on to say that Booker couldn't be considered a top player since the Suns finished dead last in offensive rating, and compared him to Andrew Wiggins as another type of high-volume, low-efficiency guy, you know, those types of guys that can only score. So basically, you're all caught up to speed. I could spend the next 30 minutes, I feel like, Mike, talking about why these are all bad takes, but I just want to say like one sort of short thing in response to all of them. In response to Vernon, I think it's pretty funny how the statistics consistently have demonstrated that Brandon Knight was an absolute disaster the last time he was healthy for Phoenix, and yet because he was acquired by Daryl Morey, suddenly everyone considers him to be some sort of great reclamation project. I mean, it's not that hard to look it up and see that the Suns were 10 points worse on their net rating with Knight on the floor the last time he was healthy 2 years ago. Ryan Anderson, I admit, is a flawed player, but you know he can at least be somewhat effective in the regular season, if not in the playoffs when he admittedly again becomes this sort of defensive matchup nightmare. But Knight might not even be capable as an NBA caliber player in the regular season anymore. He really might be that bad. To Bill Simmons, I really just want to stop talking about the Celtics. Not only did he make that comment about Jason Tatum being a future MVP caliber player, but not Devin Booker or Karl Anthony Towns. In that episode, he also criticized the Pacers and said that he would take Marcus Smart alone over Tyreek Evans and Doug McDermott combined, because those were the main acquisitions for the Pacers this offseason, which I just think is so fucking asinine. And that right there says all you really need to know about you know, Bill Simmons' ability to analyze the game at this point in his career, especially when anything Boston related comes into the picture. And for Golliver, he conveniently ignores the fact that Booker has some pretty great advanced offensive metrics. He has a comparable true shooting percentage to established guys like Brad Beal, CJ McCollum, DeMar DeRozan, which is clear evidence that he's not just getting these empty buckets like a guy like Andrew Wiggins. He also ignored the fact that the Suns finishing dead last in offensive rating has quite a lot to do with them going 5-23 in the games that Booker missed when they rolled out disaster lineup after disaster lineup. I think overall, the bottom line that I'm trying to get out here, Mike, is I think the most frustrating thing about all of this, as I've been collecting my thoughts about the Suns this offseason, are these double standards. All we've heard from the national perspective for the past 3 years is that this team's blatant attempts at losing are a disgrace, which is a viewpoint that I agree with. So then this season we go out and actually make an effort, and the Suns are still consistently getting demonized. Bill Simmons doesn't understand why the Suns targeted Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza if it only allows them to win 30 or 35 games. But I would ask Bill Simmons this: does he or does he not want a competitive National Basketball Association? Is it better for any team not in the hunt for a top six seed to just tank their season away and toil at the bottom of the standings instead? Because according to him, Devin Booker supposedly doesn't contribute to winning basketball, but we're also not even supposed to give him the chance to succeed by building around him, and instead just, as Phoenix Suns fans, accepting that there's a natural order to the universe and just giving up. The thing that frustrates me about all of these national writers is that the Suns right now, we know that the culture, it's not a positive culture, but the way you build a positive culture has to be slowly, oftentimes in incremental steps. Not every team has the advantage of just, you know, if you're Bill Simmons acquiring Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen in one offseason, for instance. You have to make these incremental steps towards getting better, and I just don't understand what is so hard about that to understand for a lot of these members in the national media. So, I mean, I don't know. That's basically what I have to say. I guess I would conclude this by saying I have a challenge. I have a challenge, Mike, if you just let me go keep this ISO going for one more minute. I want to challenge each of these guys to one thing. To Ben Golliver, I challenge you to watch a Suns game with us, because you say that you don't believe people watch Suns games. I don't believe you watched any Suns games last year, especially when Booker was sidelined, because if you had, you might have seen our starting lineup of Tyler Ulis, Troy Daniels, Daniel House, Dragan Bender, and Alex Len, and realize that our massive failures as an organization, because they were massive failures, do not fall squarely on the shoulders of Devin Booker. And I'm willing to do this over Skype. I'm willing to do this over FaceTime. I'm willing to make it fun for all parties involved. But just please watch a Suns game with us and prove that you actually know what you're talking about. To Bill Simmons, I challenge you to go a full episode of your podcast without bringing up the Boston Celtics in any way, shape, or form. And I promise that it's
impossible.
None of these three guys are probably ever going to hear what I'm saying right now. But if you do, Bill, if you do, Mike and I promise to do an entire NBA season preview episode without any mention of the Suns. And we are a Phoenix Suns podcast. Eliminate your obvious homerism, which is so, so grating to listen to. And we will eliminate ours as well. And to Chris Vernon, stop making fun of Kevin O'Connor's hobbies and music taste on your show, because Kevin O'Connor sounds like a stand-up guy. He has a truly eclectic taste in some great Indian alternative artists. And on the most recent episode of the Ringer Pod, he was making fun of the fact that Kevin O'Connor went to a poetry slam. I think the idea of him going to a poetry slam, I think that's pretty fucking cool. So Chris, cut that out. That's it. Those are my challenges to those guys. It's us against the world, Mike. Fuck the national media. Let's go. And again, just to reiterate it one more time, we're not even saying Bravo. That the Suns are going to be that great, but it's just we have to defend them from this constant hate.
Bravo. That was fantastic. I want to say a couple things on that. First of all, thank you to Kevin O'Connor. I know, like you said, they're probably never going to hear this, but thank you to Kevin O'Connor for actually making an effort in defending the Suns. One. Two, Ben Golliver, go fuck yourself. Three, Bill Simmons talking about Devin Booker's unicycle conspiracy theory on his podcast was straight up irresponsible. That, first of all, have they never seen a bike before? That was very clearly a bicycle. People can ride bicycles. You shouldn't be propagating. You shouldn't be talking about something that was clearly proven fake. It's not even close to being real. It's irresponsible as the person who runs the largest sports podcast, maybe the largest sports podcast out there, to be talking about something that is complete bullshit. Come on, Bill. You're better than this. And really, Chris Vernon, you don't know, you wouldn't know what good music was if it hit you in the face. I don't know what Chris Vernon's problem is with the Suns, but actually, here's my theory on all three of these guys. When teams are bad, and these guys, their job is to follow teams from a national media perspective, when they're bad, the only thing they can do is say they should lose more. That's their only thing, because what happens is they don't have the time to watch every team. So they don't watch the worst teams in the league. So that means that the only theory they can come up with is, well, maybe they should just tank and get more draft picks. Well, that's not always the case. At a certain point, a team has to try to win. And in this case, that's the Suns this season. Trading Brandon Knight wasn't a bad thing. That wasn't a bad thing at all. And in fact, all of these same media people, when Marquese Chriss was on the team, I guarantee they were saying that Marquese Chriss was not a beneficial player on this team. The idea that Brandon Knight all of a sudden has become a tradable contract now that he's on the Houston Rockets is complete bullshit. He was a tradable contract when he was on the Suns. And you know what kind of player you got back? Ryan Anderson. That's the kind of contract and tradable contract that he is going forward in the future as well. Nothing's changed. He's still Brandon Knight. He's not great. He doesn't contribute to winning, and he's not going to do that in Houston either. Marquese Chriss, I love. He's a nice kid. I hope he's successful in the future. But the idea that Brandon Knight is some sort of asset now is completely insane. These people, I'm over it. I'm over it. Let's get to the mail.
Let's just talk about the mail.
That right there is the mail. Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail with you all day, okay?
We're getting too upset over this. We just got to let, you know, wait one more month for the season to start. Let these guys play. They're going to prove them wrong. That's all it is. We're putting money down on it right now. They're going to prove them wrong. All these guys are going to be proved wrong, and Kevin O'Connor will reap the rewards as the only national media member to come to defense of the Suns. People forget that the Sixers went from 10 to 28 to 52 wins in 2 years. You know, it's sort of just a testament to how quickly you can go from laughingstock to being the media darlings again, and I'm sure that day will come for the Suns, but just this offseason has been tough.
It's up to us as Suns fans to remember what everyone is saying right now. Remember. I don't think Sixers fans did, because there was a lot of people that were talking lots of shit about Sixers, the team, and what they were doing to tank. And everything changed when they started winning. And maybe those same people criticized the JJ Redick signing when it happened. And it's going to be really interesting to see what changes. We shall not forget. I can promise you that. This podcast will not forget. All right, mail. Thank you to everyone who sent in questions to us for the mailbag on this week's episode. We're really excited to go over a lot. We got a lot of them. We probably don't have time to go over every single one of them, so we'll try and get as many as possible in on this podcast right now. All right, Sam, you want to just alternate back and forth, question to question? We'll choose them.
Sure thing. You want to start?
All right, let's do it. Yes, I'll start. I'm going to choose one from Facebook first, and I think it's funny that we only got a few comments on our Facebook post. Our Facebook is new. We're trying to figure out how to use Facebook because, we're just trying to figure it out. But it's funny. We only got three comments on our post, but two of them were from people named Alessandro.
Yeah,
kind of funny. But Alessandro Crozzi, we started our last mailbag with a question from Alessandro. Let's start this one with a question from Alessandro as well. Among the players except Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges, who is the one that you're most confident will become a part of the core when the Suns are a playoff team again? All right, so he's taking out the four most obvious answers: Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges. This question becomes difficult because the most obvious answers are some of the young guys as well. So we can go down the list: Dragan Bender, Elia Kobo. To me, those are probably the two most likely answers left. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'm assuming we're not including TJ Warren as really a young player anymore, so I would go with...
Well, we can include TJ Warren too. Likelihood is TJ Warren's going to be traded.
Yeah, well, I know that's your opinion. I think when Alessandro was asking this, and I guess he could clarify, I think he probably meant Warren not being included in the first place as a young player anymore, in which case I'm going to go with Elia Kobo. I think is most likely, just in terms of the crop of young point guards we have right now, I do believe he has the highest potential. And so I would like to see him realize some of that potential and stick around, maybe not necessarily as a starting point guard, but at least as a backup by the time the Suns are next in the playoffs.
I 100% agree, and I think it's because of his skill set. Eliakobo has the ability of hitting the three-point shot off the dribble. People are probably tired of hearing me talk about it, especially on Reddit. I talk about it a lot, but that skill is very important, especially when you have a massive guy like DeAndre Ayton setting screens. To have a guy that can shoot like that behind the arc, off the dribble, that's going to be really important next to Devin Booker. And the other thing I'll say about this, when we first scouted Eliakobo, we talked about him initially on our draft podcast. We talked about him a little bit after he was drafted. I did not realize how huge he was. He's a massive dude, and I think that strength could benefit him defensively next to Devin Booker as well. So as far as the fit goes, that's probably the most likely one out of the young guys that could be successful on this team in the future. That's what I think.
Yeah, that's really reasonable. Seems like, you know, neither of us chose Bender there, which is interesting, but we'll move right along. The next one I want to bring up, this one was one of the most upvoted comments on the Reddit thread, so I feel like it should be addressed. It's from user Friend Eater, longtime our Suns user. And he says, I fail to see how the playoffs are out of reach. Not really a question, but I just want to know why you guys don't think they are. He goes on to say, the Suns were on pace for 31 wins before the tanking started. We added Ariza, Anderson, Ayton, Bridges, got Booker and Warren back, not to mention improvement of our young guys like Jackson and an actual coach. I think it is completely possible we had 15 wins to the 31 projected last season. Mike, do you want to give a take on this one first?
Yes, I'm glad he asked this question because we did our win projections before the trade. And I still think it's very, very unlikely that we are going to make the playoffs, but I don't think it's as insane as it was before. And there's a couple reasons why. One, I did not like Brandon Knight. That is on the record. I was not a fan of Brandon Knight. And I think that Brandon Knight makes teams worse. So there is an addition by subtraction just by getting rid of Brandon Knight. And I understand we have a massive hole at the point guard and that needs to be filled somehow in order for us to change. But I also think that losing Marquise Chris's minutes is important for this team as well. And I think Marquise Chris's minutes, I would not have minded playing him if we were on the team with a sort of forward-looking idea to it, because playing Marquise Chris is important when he's still on your team. He's got to develop. He's got to figure things out. Everyone knows the excuses made with Marquise Chris. He only played basketball the last few years. He's really just learning for the first time. So yeah, that kind of guy you have to play. But that eliminates a developmental spot that we had to fill. So we take another player out where we are no longer attempting to develop a player on the court in games that count. So taking away two guys in Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris and replacing their minutes with maybe Shaq Harrison, who I think benefits winning more. Obviously there's problems, but he's the type of guy who makes winning plays and doesn't really make mistakes in the same way that Brandon Knight does. And then replacing Marquise Chris's minutes and a lot of Dragan Bender's minutes with a guy like Ryan Anderson, who can win you games. Now, there's obvious criticisms of Ryan Anderson. Oh, you can't play against the Warriors. Well, guess what? That's not a problem for the Suns. We're not going to play the Warriors in the playoffs. And if we do, that's a huge success. It's not a plan to beat them in the playoffs. It would be amazing if we made it and we played them as the 8 seed and they were the 1 seed. That's a step in the right direction. So, well, I still think it's very, very unlikely that we make the playoffs. I don't think it's as out of reach as before. This is the most three-point shooting the Phoenix Suns team has had in 8 years, in 8 seasons. And I think that if everything clicks and everyone's hitting their shots, the Suns are set to surprise people. I just think that as a podcast, we have a responsibility to set proper expectations, and my expectations are not that's going to happen. I think that's an outlier. That is something that everything would have to click and work in the right way. And that means we'd have to win 47, 48 games. And we'd have to count on other teams in the West dropping out of it, because that's what makes it really hard. It's that we're in the Western Conference. I imagine you feel kind of similarly, but maybe you're a little more pessimistic on it. What do you think?
Don't label me. You don't know what I think. No, but you're right. You know me too well at this point. I'm going to say that. I don't think the playoffs are out of reach. I would never want to label the team like that going into the season. It's just being realistic that everything would have to go right for us to make the playoffs in arguably the strongest conference of all time right now. And, you know, it's just flashbacks to before last season when we were talking about, oh, the team could be pretty good this year. Booker's going to improve. We're going to have a healthy Bledsoe. We're going to win 30 to 35 wins. And then Bledsoe demanded a trade 3 games in. It's just you can't bank on things going right especially when we've had so many sad stories over the past several years.
Yep, 100%. So I hope you're right, Friend Eater. That would be amazing if
we want to prove Bill Simmons wrong, and Nate Duncan and Ben Golliver, all of them.
Apparently, Devin Booker just has to not be completely terrible to prove them wrong, because that's their expectations. All right, Ignacio Araneda Barilla. I thought it was important that I tried to pronounce that entire name. This is a Twitter follower of ours. He said, "Do you think Bender can improve enough to be the future starting four next to DeAndre Ayton?" He also said, "Love the pod, thank you, and greetings from Chile." Thank you. I just to actually point this out, I was looking at the stats for our podcast recently, and I think we've been listened to in 14 different countries, which is pretty awesome. Thank you to everyone all over the world who's listening to us. And Chile, I think, is like top three or four countries that we're listened to. So, Ignacio, thank you for listening to us from Chile. And whoever else out there is listening to us from Chile, shout out to you. Thank you for listening to the timeline. We're really happy. Now, as far as this question goes, do you think Bender can improve enough to be the starting four next to DeAndre Ayton? I'm going to just give it just a straight up answer first, and that is no. I don't think that. But here's what I'll say to hedge, because I don't want to focus on being a pessimist here. This season is very important for Dragan Bender. He has a real coach, and a real coach that can try to take advantage of his theoretical skill set that he believes that he has. Now, I'm not saying he has no skill sets, but Bender thinks he's a playmaker. We haven't seen it yet. And if he is a playmaker, this will be the season where we can kind of learn. One thing I'll say, though, is his three-point shooting, if it improves, if it makes a similar improvement from year two to year three that it made from year one to year two, that might be all it takes. That and consistent defense might be all it takes. I think it's unlikely, if I had to choose yes or no, if you were putting a gun to my head, I would choose no. But this season, I think at the end of this season, in a way, we can almost look at this as his real rookie season, because this is the first time he's actually going to have a real coach. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Ignacio, first of all, thanks for being a listener. Thanks for a great question. I like this question a lot, so I wanted to do a bit of a deeper dive into it statistically. I want to say, first of all, no advanced stat is perfect, but a couple of advanced stats that I was looking at. Bender last year, he played 2,000 minutes. He had a player efficiency rating of 7.1. He had a value over replacement player of -0.4. And those two stats alone, I recognize, do not paint a complete picture of any player, but I use those two to sort of create a filter in Basketball Reference. And I looked for players all time who had a season, their age 20 season, because that is how old Bender was last year, where they played at least 1,000 minutes, where they had a negative VORP, value over replacement player, and they had a player efficiency rating of less than 10. So actually being a little bit nice to Bender, giving him a little more leeway. And I just wanted to see what the results were. I wanted to see which players came up, what the best case scenarios were, and what the worst case scenarios were as we look at players who have had those profiles throughout their career. And I'm sure you were expecting this, Mike, but it doesn't look all that pretty. The absolute best case scenario, well, first of all, there were 10 players overall who had such a season when they were 20 years old all time. 10 players who, up until the year 2014, I didn't want to go past that because, you know, players who had a similar season to Bender only a year or two ago could still, a lot is still fluid in their careers. But of those 10 players, the best case is Jamal Crawford, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Austin Rivers. And I think out of that group, you see one guy who has carved out a great career as a sixth man in Jamal Crawford, and a couple guys who have been fringe starters. But if that's the best you're talking about, it doesn't look great. And then you get to the worst cases, which are more common, and you see Deshaun Stevenson, DeMar Johnson, Sasha Pavlovich, Ben McLemore, and Daquan Cook. So, you know, in talking about what Bender is right now, in a vacuum, he has the skill set where I would like to say that he can develop into a great starting four next to Ayton, because his space would be fantastic next to Ayton. Theoretically, he has this good passing game, right? But he just, there are so many holes in his game that we've talked about to death. He needs to massively improve his rebounding. He needs to actually play like he was advertised on defense. And essentially, he needs to start acting like he's really in a 7'1" frame and not in a 5'10" frame. So right now, I would agree with Mike. I would say no. The reality is he probably won't improve enough to be the future starting four next to Ayton, not on a good team, but you never know.
Yep. I hope so. I mean, it would be great as far as salaries go to have a guy that can eat up a rookie salary for a while that could potentially be a starter. But it's just, I don't... Here's the thing that I want from Bender. Here's what I wanted last season. Those of you who have known me on Reddit for the last 5 years know that I've been a big Bender supporter throughout his rookie season and about halfway through his second season. But the whole time I was just waiting for a stretch where he put it together. We haven't even gotten a stretch of 10, 15 games where he's looked like an NBA player the way we saw from Josh Jackson to end last season. We haven't gotten anything like that from Bender. I want it. I desperately want it. We haven't seen it. So until I see it, I can't be comfortable enough to say yes to that question. And I hope it does happen, Ignacio, and I appreciate the question.
Absolutely. Next one I'm going to go with is from Turd Scrambler. Just wanted to say that username. Is this current roster possibly the best group of dunkers the Suns have ever had? Based on my not-at-all-scientific formula, here are some candidates for teams to consider. He talks about the 94 team, KJ, Barkley, Chambers, Cedric Ceballos. He talks about 2000 with Penny, Tom Gugliotta, Rex Chapman, rookie Sean Marion. 2003 had Amari, Marion, and Joe Johnson. He talks about 2011, which actually I think is going to be an interesting candidate here because you had Vince Carter and Jason Richardson at different times. You had Josh Childress, Mikal Petras, and Hakeem Warwick, and then obviously 2018, we know who's on the current roster. But just, you know, judging...
Wait. He listed Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, Rashawn Holmes, which are all good dunkers, and then he listed Tyson Chandler, Devin Booker, Trevor Ariza, and Mikal Bridges.
Well, I was going to mention that. Well, Mikal Bridges...
I think that's important.
Good dunker. Tyson Chandler at this point I would throw out. So I guess I'll go...
Nope.
I'll go ahead and say 2018 is probably tossed out of the ranking. So I would say to your question, yes. Probably no. Is this the best group of dunkers the Suns have ever had? I wouldn't say that unless something unexpected happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. And here's the team that I want to throw out just as an example. We had a team with Shaquille O'Neal, Amari Stoudemire, and Jason Richardson all on the team at the same time. Those are two guys who competed in the dunk contest. And one guy who won the dunk contest, I believe he won twice, if I'm not mistaken, in Jason Richardson. And Shaq was a little older, and I don't know if we're talking about just like this theoretical idea of them in their primes, but I think we're talking about them on the team that they were on at the time. Shaq could still put it down. Amari Stoudemire, one of the greatest dunkers at the power forward position of all time, and Jason Richardson, incredible, one of the greatest dunkers in the last 20 years probably. So that's the team that I would throw out there.
Yeah, you know, I'm on paper, I'm tempted to go with 2011, but Vince Carter really didn't give a shit in Phoenix. Jason Richardson was past his prime. I kind of miss watching Hakeem Warwick dunk off the pick and roll with Steve Nash, but I don't think that's really enough. 94 is also tempting. That's the obvious choice that we have to talk about here. You just have a great list of dunkers there. KJ, Barkley, Dumas, mm-hmm. Chambers, Ceballos. That one, honestly, is
that's probably
underrated.
The one.
That might be the one. So I don't know. I would say probably between 94 or 11. Is the current roster the best group of dunkers? No.
No. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not disagreeing that we don't have a lot of good dunkers on the team right now. Josh Jackson, we're still waiting for that poster. He almost got it. He missed a dunk last year that was almost the poster, but it's going to happen this year. We're going to see an insane Josh Jackson dunk. I guarantee it. Let's do another one from Twitter. Twitter user SLOBub, a great Twitter user on Twitter, so shout out to him. He had a two-part question here, and I'll let you answer this one first. Thoughts on TJ McConnell and DeLon Wright, their fit on this team and how attainable they are, and also how necessary is point guard with the possibility of two non-point guards in Devin Booker and Josh Jackson having some playmaking ability? So two-part question there. Go ahead and start, Sam.
Sure, I'll go kind of quickly through it. I've talked about DeLon Wright before. I'm a big fan. How attainable, that's the question, right? Now that Fred VanVleet is locked up, they still have Kyle Lowry. I would like to think he is attainable, but on the other hand, with them trying to kind of really make a go at it in the Eastern Conference, what is he attainable for? It's not like they're going to be interested in our late first-round Bucks pick when they think, theoretically, they're trying to convince Kawhi to stay, first of all, but also they think they have a chance at a championship, or at least at getting to the finals. So attainable, it's going to be tough. In theory, love is fit next to Booker. TJ McConnell, I'm more lukewarm on, but I could still warm up to the idea of him on the Suns as well. Now, in regards to your second question, I think Josh Jackson has the potential to be a good playmaker. I don't think we've seen enough of it yet to really say that we could just roll with Devin Booker and Josh Jackson as our full-time backcourt and be comfortable with that. We've seen Josh getting that sort of tunnel vision, playing too fast when he doesn't slow the game down enough, and it leads to stupid turnovers. So I'm not really comfortable there to just put him in that much of a playmaker position yet, but he could get there.
I'll fly through it too. TJ McConnell and DeLon Wright would both be the best point guards on our roster right now. I love TJ McConnell. I think he's a great player. I think his vision, his ability to shoot, play off the ball, he would be a good fit on this team. Not a great defender just because of his size, but I still think that he could be a player that would benefit in a winning scenario. DeLon Wright, I feel the same way about. But the second question, I think I want to clarify. So he said, how necessary is a point guard with playmakers like Booker and Josh Jackson? And I've been riding the point Booker train. But the reason I have been riding that point Booker train is under the assumption that our roster is not going to change. We absolutely need a point guard on this team. It's necessary. The reason I think Devin Booker should play point guard right now is because we have a bunch of shit point guards on our roster. None that are currently ready is a better way to put it. I think that we could have a future starter in Eli Okobo, and you know how much I love Shaq Harrison, but the best point guard on our team currently is Devin Booker, and that's saying something because he is not a point guard. And that's the reason I've been riding that point Booker train. It's not because I think that the future is Devin Booker a point guard, but I'm not ruling that out as a possibility. This season, because of the position we're in currently, and especially now that McDonough has sort of come out and said that he's sort of willing to roll with the point guards we have, likely because nobody wanted to trade for TJ Warren, I do expect to see more of that from Devin Booker. And in a real offensive system surrounded by shooters, we'll get a much better idea if it's possible for Devin Booker to play point guard full-time in the future. So that's the only reason I wanted to address that one directly, because I know I've been riding that train and I wanted to make sure I clarified that I do think we need a point guard. I think that it's absolutely necessary that we get a point guard. I just don't think that this is it's only because of the way the roster is currently constructed.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yeah, back to Reddit, okay, I'd say. Cool. Right? Back to Reddit. The rest of them are on Reddit.
I'll go. Yeah, I think so. User Q&A. I think this is good because we were just talking about point guards. How would you rank our point guards we currently have against each other, both for immediate production and future potential? I'm going to start on this one. For immediate production, I would go Shaq Harrison is the best bet we've got right now. We're riding the Shaq Harrison should be the starter train. After that, probably Isaiah Cannon. Who knows what he's going to look like after the injury, but he did look good in short spurts for the Suns last year. And then I'd go Okobo and then Melton last. You can't bank on rookies to have great production for you from the outset. But then if we're talking about the future, Mike, I think you might agree here. I'm not 100% sure, but I would go with Eli Okobo being number one just based on his potential. You talk about his ability to shoot off the dribble, but overall he's a very polished offensive guard in a way that Shaq and Melton both have so far to go offensively that I just think Okobo's ceiling is going to be a little higher because of his offensive instincts. So I'd go Okobo, then Shaq, then Melton, and then Cannon being last because it's in question whether he can even bounce back from this injury in the first place for the future.
I have a question for you on that, Sam. If Cannon did not injure himself last year, would he be number one on that list?
No.
Let's say the current list.
He would still be number two on that list, I think.
Okay. I've been thinking about this after we had John Bloom on. Thanks again to John Bloom. Holy crap, that was so good. But it seems like we are the lowest on Isaiah Cannon of a lot of Suns personalities out there. Would you agree with that?
That might be true. I mean, when we got news that Cannon was signed officially, I kind of thought, okay, well, this is like a nice gesture, but he's just going to be cut.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting to question, especially as the DeAnthony Melton situation is still up in the air. We don't exactly know what's going on. Cannon might make the final roster. He might even contribute, play some minutes. So, yeah, I guess you could say we've been underrating his potential impact.
Yeah, I think that maybe that's possible, too. He's a veteran. He's the oldest of the group, and he's a guy who could potentially contribute if he does bounce back from that injury. I think it's fair to rank them the way you rank them because of his injury. We don't know how good he's going to be, and it's hard to put him anywhere on that list higher than the bottom if we don't know how good he's going to be. It was a pretty gruesome injury. We don't know what it's going to take to bounce back from that, especially in this coming season. But I think I agree. I just really like Shaq Harrison. I think, what would it take for Shaq Harrison to be the best, right? All he would have to do, and I know this is a lot to ask, but all he would have to do is fix that three-point shot. Am I right?
Yeah, well, the three-point shot, I mean, a 35 to 40% three-point shot, and suddenly he's Patrick Beverley, right? That's what we're talking about, and Patrick Beverley. But here's the thing, Patrick Beverley as your ceiling, there's a reason Shaq is under Okobo. right? Because I think Kobo has the potential to be a better point guard than just a Patrick Beverley, even more than a role player. I think he could be a real scoring threat on your team if we're talking about him achieving his full ceiling.
Yeah, I think I agree. Here's the thing about Kobo. If we're going off of Summer League, and I know it's not much to go off of, and it's hard to rank a player like a Kobo against these players until we see him in the NBA. It's really just difficult to know what it's going to look like. But he appeared to be the guy with the best vision, the best point guard vision. So it's not just the shooting potential for a Kobo. It also seemed like he may be the best passer of the bunch as well. And that makes a big difference. To have a point guard, you have to have a guy that can move the ball. Mind you, our potential best player in the future could be DeAndre Ayton. Of course, we all assume it's going to be Devin Booker, but Ayton has that number one player potential. He could be our best player. And you know what you need when you have a center, if your big man is one of your best players, you need a guy who can get them the ball. So being able to pass the ball, that's going to be very important. And yeah, I think I basically agree with your ratings, but I think that Harrison could be the best point guard. Harrison's going to start. That's my prediction. Harrison's going to start, and then we'll see from there. Let's move on. Actually, just quickly, we did get a question from Dom on Facebook. He asked us to explain D'Anthony Melton's contract situation. We have no idea. We thought we understood it, but it seems like he was supposed to have been offered a contract by now, based on how we understood the rules. But I do want to say quickly, and then I'll move on to another question. This is what hurts about not having a guy like Scott Bordeaux covering the team anymore, because Scott Bordeaux is the guy that we would reach out to in a scenario like this, a guy with direct connections with the team where we can get a direct something as nitty-gritty as maybe one of the last guys on our roster. We want to know about that. Not every Suns fans do, but the type of people who listen to a Phoenix Suns podcast in the beginning of September, that's the kind of thing that we want to know about. We want to know about D'Anthony Melton's contract situation. And that's not something that the Godfather Gambadoro is going to talk about, because he's on sports radio. They got to cover more general topics. But that's the type of thing that a guy like Scott Bordeaux would cover, and it's unfortunate that we can't reach out to him and ask. Maybe, I guess we could ask Gina Mizell, but maybe her answer will be behind a paywall, and we won't get the answer. So let's move on to another one. Let's go in order now, I think, of highest upvoted comments, and let's go just a few more minutes here and see how many we can get in. If you could get any guest speaker, this is from Ridiculous Cage on Reddit, if you could get any guest speaker on your podcast, so who would we have as a guest and why? And then let's answer that first. I got to say, lately I've been thinking Kevin O'Connor, right? I mean, we talked about it. How great would it be to have Kevin O'Connor on the podcast, right?
Yeah, Tim? I mean, if you're talking about national media perspective, obviously we're both big fans of Kevin and the work he does for The Ringer. Frankly, you know.
And he's got our back.
And generally speaking, I'm fans of what Bill Simmons provides as well. It's just that his homer takes bother me. Kevin would be great. Any player would be great. We'd love to be able to have that connection, to talk to players at some point, but we understand that's hard. It's a hard bargain.
Yeah, Ayton would be probably up there, maybe at the top, because he just seems so entertaining. I can't imagine how great he would be if he had an hour with him, DeAndre Ayton. I think that's it. I was trying to think of another one, but let's move on to the other part of that question. Where would you like to take the timeline in the future? Do you think it'll be strictly a podcast, or do you envision a website like Bright Side of the Sun with articles and having media credentials in the future? We don't know. We're open to a lot of ideas right now. So if you guys have ideas, feel free to throw them at us. Maybe we can work together on something. So we're open. I'd say that.
Yeah, but we're open to ideas. I mean, we're in a position where we'd like to cater the experience to what you guys want. So tell us what content you want from us, and we can do our best to provide it. Understand there are limitations on what we're capable of doing, just the two of us, especially as long as this is a free podcast and as long as everything we're producing is for free. But yeah, we don't really know where we're taking this thing in the future, but we're just happy to have some listeners right now.
I do wonder, just as a question, maybe we'll get some Suns fans who could comment if they listened this far into this podcast. Is there interest if we were to create a YouTube channel? Because I've considered that. That's something that's been on my mind. So if you think that you would actually watch those videos, let us know, because I have some ideas for videos that I could think could be kind of fun. Let's move on to the next question. Sam, it's your turn.
Sure. Toasty, what is your opinion on the prospect of the Suns trading Dragan Bender in a package for a point guard?
Do
with
it.
A trade for... All right, Mike, take it away.
Well, I just don't think he's off limits at all. If you got a good point guard lined up, you got to trade him. You got to trade him.
Well, a good point guard, sure, but if it's Corey Joseph, I'd like to give Bender another year, especially now with Chris gone.
I agree with that.
I, in theory, would like to give Bender another year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Maybe he's our point guard.
Oh, God. Please, no. Next one, you take it away.
Okay, let's see. Actually, let's finish Toasty's question. He said, with the trade for Ryan Anderson, the four position has a logjam, especially if the Suns plan on playing Ariza, Warren, Jackson at the four at times. So those are threes that could potentially play at the four. You could even throw Bridges in, although I think Bridges is more likely to play down as a shooting guard right now based on his weight than he is to play up at the four. I think his long-term future could be sometime from two to four. So that's kind of what his point was there. That I don't think that necessitates a trade right now, just to clarify on that. I don't think that there's too many players in a way that we'd have to get rid of people. I think that limiting Dragan Bender's minutes is something that Suns fans are going to have to be prepared for. The only reason he played so many minutes in the past is because we weren't very good. If we're going to try and win, he's going to play less minutes, and I do think that's not going to be bad for his development in the future because he's going to be playing with better players around him. So don't be surprised if
that
he plays less
minutes. That is a fantastic segue to the next question, which happens to be most upvoted from Suns Mate. Do you think it could be good for the young player's development to have to fight for minutes with veterans?
100%.
Yeah, no, I think it's great.
Here's a point that I made before, but I want to reiterate it again. People talk about how great Kawhi Leonard's development was on the Spurs, how great Jason Tatum's development was on the Celtics. But then they say that all of these teams that have bad records should just tank to get great players. Well, why was their development so great on the Spurs and on the Celtics? Because they had a bunch of great players surrounding them. They learned how to be good from players who are good. This idea that every team has to tank, actually, this goes to the rant that we had earlier. The idea that these teams that are bad just have to lose more and that's going to solve all their problems is just ridiculous. You have to, at some point, surround these young guys with real players so they can learn what it's like to be a professional in this league, and that's what you do.
Absolutely. And in response to Suns Mate's question as well, I mean, I thought the biggest tragedy of last season was us just guaranteeing 48 minutes a game to Marquese Chriss and Dragan Bender. That was an absolute tragedy. Not in terms of their development necessarily, more so in terms of my eyes as I was watching these basketball games. But it's if Dragan can't carve out 10 or 15 minutes per game because he's losing those minutes to Ryan Anderson because Igor decides Ryan Anderson is the way to go, guess what? Dragan's in his third year now. He's just not going to be that great of an NBA player. If he's losing out minutes to Rashawn Holmes at the backup five, he's not going to be that great of an NBA player. He needs to fight with these guys for minutes at this point. It can't be a given anymore. It's just not acceptable if it is.
All right, let's do a rapid fire to wrap up the podcast. You ready, Sam?
Oh, yeah.
As quickly as possible, in as little words as possible, who are your top three most hated players of all time?
Robert Horry, Bruce Bowen, Ron Artest.
Seconded. All right, if we do, maybe Markieff Morris, you could say, is right there. And that's Bose and Hose. Thanks for that question. Easy Fred, if we do trade for one of the cheap point guards like Beverly Dinwiddie Joseph, which one of our own do you think we get rid of? Because right now we already have four of them on the roster. We already have four point guards.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Cannon, but now based on the conversation we were having earlier, maybe I'm second guessing that. I still do think it has to be Cannon, though. You kick out the veteran, if you want to call him that we currently have and replace him with whichever veteran we trade for.
I agree with that, and I think don't be surprised if D'Anthony Melton is traded as well. This is from Zin Point, my favorite Redditor. How do you rank the rotation players in terms of minutes per game and who's out of the rotation? I don't know if we have time to fully delve into this question.
I made a quick breakdown for this. You want me to quickly go through it?
Fire through it. Yeah.
All right. So I basically envisioned the roster as this. I tiered it 30 plus minutes per game. I'm going Booker, Ariza, Ayton. I think those are going to be the only three guys who can actually be guaranteed that much. 20 to 30 minutes per game. Shaq Harrison, more so out of necessity. Ryan Anderson, TJ Warren, Josh Jackson. 10 to 20 minutes per game. I would go with Mikal Bridges, Dragan Bender, and Elia Kobo. And then everyone else less than 10. So that's Cannon, Melton, Daniels, Reed, Holmes, Chandler. Those guys are all fighting for scraps.
The guaranteed starters, Devin Booker, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, and DeAndre Ayton. Everyone else are going to be fighting for minutes. Rocky 17 is the key for the timeline, not the podcast, but the actual timeline, keeping our young core together through their primes so we can peak as the current super teams start to age out. And then he said it's hard to gauge how close we are to serious playoff contention. Yes, not only is that the key to the timeline, the actual team, that is something that Ryan McDonough addressed directly and the owner, Robert Sarver, addressed in a meeting that they had with season ticket holders. That's clearly the key. That's clearly the plan.
Now, if I can just add something. Oh, yeah, it's totally the plan. I agree with you. But look to the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, OKC Thunder as a cautionary tale, too, because you're going to be put in the position eventually where if you have all of these young players coming up at the same time, you're going to be forced to make tough decisions about who you can afford to pay and who you need to sort of trade and retool. And obviously, the Thunder made the wrong decision. That's all I'll say. Eventually, that time will come. Don't get too attached to any prospect right now, because if they really do grow together, just look at what ended up happening to the Thunder.
Okay, what realistic packages could McDonough offer to Portland for Lillard? Same question goes to Kemba Walker. Let's start with Lillard. Josh Jackson, our future pick, and some salary filler, I would say, right?
Well, yeah, but they're not going to accept that.
Right, but that's probably what we have.
Well, we have more. Look, we could throw them Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, your choice of Okobo or Melton, and two first-round picks, and then Tyson Chandler for salary filler. That's probably the most appealing offer we could make without having to really give up on the timeline, and I think that's a compelling offer, but anything less than that, they're not going to accept.
Yeah. A better way to put it for my answer would be a package around Josh Jackson and our future first.
Okay.
I think that's the most likely. Kemba Walker is a different story. I don't know that we have the right assets. I don't know what they want. I have no idea, first of all, how good they're going to be next year. That's a really weird put-together team. I think they actually could be better because every team that Dwight Howard has left was kind of better after he was gone. So there's a chance they could be better, and maybe in that case they don't want to trade for him. That's just harder to
gauge. Kemba's an expiring contract, so I feel like in a vacuum his value shouldn't... Like, I feel like I should be able to offer TJ Warren the Bucks pick and one of Okobo or Melton, and because Kemba could dart since he's an unrestricted free agent next summer, that's more than he's worth. Like, that should be enough, but I don't think the Hornets actually see that as fair value, so I really don't know what they want.
Let's make this the last one, and Sam, do you agree that we can go on to the Reddit thread and just answer the rest of the questions on Reddit? We can write out our
answers?
Oh,
absolutely, guys, and I just want to make it clear, we will continue to have these in the future and always get through as many as we possibly can. To all of you who sent us questions, thank you so much. I'm sorry we couldn't answer all of them this time.
Okay, so this one, I'm planning on coming to Phoenix.
Rice Bledsoe.
One Saturday, this is Rice Bledsoe, I'm planning on coming to Phoenix one Saturday or Sunday to watch a home Suns game for the first time this season, first because he's always lived in California. What matchups do you think I should aim for? And when I come, can I do a pod with you two? First of all, Rice, definitely hit me up. I haven't actually looked at the schedule to see what games are on Saturdays and Sundays. Perfect.
My boy, if you want to see a win... Sunday, February 2nd versus Atlanta, or Saturday, March 30th versus Memphis would be your best bets. If you're willing to see a loss, look at anywhere else, you know? But I would say probably a really good matchup would be Saturday, December 29th versus Utah. Like, that's a great game to go to. Right around New Year's, I don't know if you're, you know, going to be on vacation or whatever. That would be a really cool game. Maybe we could even do an Our Suns meetup.
Yeah, that would be really cool. That would be a really cool one to go to. I don't know if any of these fall. Some of the most fun games to see that I've ever been to were always the OKC
games.
There's
a game against...
You can make it to a Suns versus OKC.
Yeah, there's a game Saturday, November 17th versus OKC, early on in the season as well, so definitely consider that.
Yeah, and OKC, yeah, they should beat us, but they should have beaten us pretty much every time they've come to Phoenix in the last... a few years, and those games have always been good. And we've won quite a few.
Pesky Gerald Green in his 40-point game, right?
I was at that game.
Legendary.
Very, very
fun. A legendary performance.
Yep. I loved it. All right. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for listening. This has been a really fun podcast. I'm glad you guys sent all these questions. You're making our jobs a lot easier coming up with content in the middle of September.
Yeah, again, thanks, guys, for interacting with us. Please continue to do it. To all of you who didn't get your question answered, in audio form, we will respond to you on the various threads, and thank you again.
Yep, thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the Timeline Pod. I also have a personal Twitter account at I'm Pat Burke. Yes, I'm secretly Pat Burke. Thanks again, guys, for listening. Sam, hopefully you'll have a Twitter account soon. Alan Williams. Big Sauce.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.